So this is going to be the first of three parts of the Splendid Instructions to the Mind by Sri Raghunathas Goswami. What we're presenting here, we also have a new translation of this book. We brought some from India, and so we're able to offer them to you for only $15. You can also buy them on Amazon and get them shipped, but it's going to cost you about $40 or $50. So we have brought them to you. If you like, we just have a very limited quantity that one devotee was willing to bring on a plane from India. So if you like one at the end of the presentation, it will be available. And we have here the original 12 verses of Raghunathas Goswami along with commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We have 120 new black and white drawings from 7 different international artists. And then we also have 12 full-color paintings, also as meditations on the book. In this book we have, I never before published, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bengali songs on the Srimana Shiksha. He wrote one song for each of the verses. In addition, we did something which we didn't realize had never been done before until after we did it. And that was, in addition to Bhaktivinoda's prose commentary and songs, we also have the commentary of contemporary Vaishnavas, the commentary of Jayavarta Swami, Sachinandana Swami, Bhaktivinoda Swami, Shidharva Swami, Sachinandana Swami, Jayavarta Swami, Bhaktivinoda Swami, are also in this book. So as I said, we just have a very limited quantity here. Just with a devotee who's going to bring an airplane from India, so and they're just 15, so if you like one, we will have one available at the end of the session. And we are going to be doing Krishna Moon some interactive activities. So especially tomorrow and the next day, if you can bring paper and pencil or pen. And especially on the last day, on Friday, if you can bring a songbook with you. I don't know if the temple has quantities of Vaishnava songbooks, but if you have a copy of the Vaishnava songbook, we'll be doing some activities with the songs. Okay, so why? So why is this book important? Yep. Well, there's many reasons, but we're going to focus particularly on two. The first is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this book by Raghunathas Goswami is a Bhakti. Bhakti means step, and Bhakti means progress. So this book is a step-by-step guide to attaining spontaneous love for Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically says that Rupa Goswami tells us what we should do, but it's only Raghunathas Goswami who tells us how we should do it. And that's quite an extraordinary statement. This Srimana Shiksha gets into the psychology of bhakti. Raghunathas Goswami is telling us how our inner consciousness, our inner psychology, will change and develop as we go through the process of bhakti. Now, although this is a paddhati for spontaneous devotion, for attainment of spontaneous devotion, every one of the steps here are also applicable to the beginners. So it's truly a very amazing book. It doesn't have any kinds of intimate lila, which is not recommended for beginners. And I have found that although certainly Raghunathas Goswami intended this for the serious practitioner, that I have found that everybody is able to benefit from it, even from the later verses, because it's going in a very step-by-step fashion. It's also very important for our ISKCON society as a whole, and we were very happy that we were able to publish this book in the year of ISKCON's 15th anniversary. Some of you may know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was criticized for not having taught the path of spontaneous love. He was, some of his critics, especially some Radha Babaji's, said, oh, he's only teaching the path of regulated devotion. And the same criticism was leveled at Srila Prabhupada. In fact, to this day, we find that people periodically leave our ISKCON society because they say, oh, I want something higher. You know, and many times they'll take shelter of some Babaji or Radhakund and so forth. So the Srimana Shiksha establishes very clearly that the way that Srila Prabhupada taught and Bhakti Siddhanta taught is completely in line with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process of spontaneous devotion. Now, in the book, we have a whole chapter dedicated to this. It was actually Devaraja Swami who insisted. He said, if you publish this book, you must have a chapter dedicated to this particular topic. So we'll be touching on this topic very briefly here in the seminar in verse 3. But if you want to go more into depth, I suggest that you study. So each verse in Mana Shiksha is a step on the path. It's a consecutive padati. At the same time, we can divide Mana Shiksha into three main parts. So the first three verses deal with qualification and orientation. The next four verses deal with obstacles and how to overcome them. The next four verses deal with steps in perfection. And the last verse is a benediction. So the benediction that's given in Srimana Shiksha is that if we sing these verses with a sweet voice, trying to understand their meanings, that we will attain love for Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. So does that sound good? Everybody else?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do then, as we go through this presentation, is we'll sing the verses, and I'd like us to sing them all together. Instead of call and response, we'll sing them together. It's to the tune of Jagannath Astakam, but we won't change the last line. And we can also recite the English together. So we're going to start our first step, which deals mostly with our qualification, our consciousness taking up the path. So we can sing all together.
Roko sego sala ichu sujane usurane swanche shriyami prajana paruva dvanva sharane sadatam ramhitva purajina purma matita
to have unprecedented and excessive attachment. Unprecedented because the attachment Raghunath Das Goswami is asking us to have is not like that seen in this world. We don't really have a precedent in our worldly life for this kind of attachment. It's very significant that Raghunath Das Goswami starts his quality with attachment. Bhakti is not of detachment, but of attachment. We become detached from matter by becoming attached to Krishna. It's also very significant that before getting into the obstacles in the later verses, Raghunath Das Goswami starts us off with attachment. So that our reason for getting rid of our obstacles, our reason for overcoming our difficulties, is our attachment. And we may be surprised because we may think of spiritual life as a path of detachment. as a path of equanimity. So what is Krishna saying in Bhagavad Gita we should be equipoised about?
Dualities.
Okay, the dualities, like which ones?
Happiness and sorrow.
Happiness and sorrow, what else?
Victory and defeat.
Victory and defeat, what else?
Hot and cold.
Hot and cold.
Pleasure and pain.
Pleasure and pain, okay, what else?
Fame and
infamy. Fame and infamy. Thank you. Thank you so much. Success and failure, yes. What else?
Death and birth.
Honor and dishonor. Friends, enemies, neutral. So we read that and we think, oh, spiritual life is about this equanimity. But the way that we become equipoised toward the material is by becoming attached to the spiritual. And here you see Raghavas Goswami is giving us a list of where we should put this attachment. Bhaktivinoda in his commentary says, if we try to become attached alone to Krishna and not to the various personalities and processes mentioned here, we will not be successful. The first word in Srimana Shiksha is Guru. Here you see, this is one of the 120 black and white illustrations we have in the book. So the black and white illustrations and the color illustrations we'll be using in this presentation. So Raghavas Goswami says we should be attached to Guru, and Bhaktivinoda in his commentary says this means the Diksha Guru, the Shiksha Guru, anyone who helps us on the path. Now significantly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur rather says in his commentary that we shouldn't see the Guru just as a saintly person, just as the Acharya, but also as our friend. So I know the first time that I met Srila Prabhupada was preaching on the Vyasasan and speaking very formally as the Acharya. And it was a wonderful experience hearing from Srila Prabhupada, hearing him speak in Bhagavatam class. And I had a sense that hearing Srila Prabhupada speaking, I mean, I was standing just at Srila Prabhupada's left, standing him throughout the class, was not any different than hearing Srila Prabhupada speak on a recording. But it was very formal. Prabhupada was there as a saintly person, as the Acharya. And we were very lucky that later that morning, my family and I got to meet Srila Prabhupada in this room in a very personal way. So although the Guru certainly is a saintly person, the Guru is also our friend. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would sign his letters out. As Prabhupada Swami likes to point out, he would also sign them. I hope this meets you in good health. So Prabhupada was our well-wisher not only spiritually, but even for our physical well-being. Why is it important to see the Guru as our friend? Because without this relationship of friendship, we're not going to really trust those who advise us, isn't it? Therefore, the seventh canto says that the disciple and the Guru should have a great bond of love. And Srila Prabhupada says, unless we have love, why would we let someone else control our life? Why would we voluntarily submit our lives to another person? After all, even if someone is very expert, if we don't trust that they care about us, then we may think that they might use their expertise to exploit us. Doesn't this happen in the world? Right? And if somebody is not expert and just loves us, they may mislead us with good intentions. So in order for us to really follow someone, we have to trust not only that they have realization, but also that there is this relationship. Raghavas Goswami says we should have great attachment for the process of surrendering to the lotus feet of the divine couple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in his commentary that this implies a one-pointedness to the feet of the divine couple. And please keep that thought in mind because we'll get to it in the next verse. But love for the process of surrender. So many times we complain about the process of surrender. Oh, now I gotta surrender. I had some really heavy purification. Right? What is it that we have to surrender, my dear friends? What is it that we're actually surrendering? Our what?
Mind.
Surrendering our mind, okay. What specifically?
Desire.
Okay, well, the mind is already Krishna's, and the body is already Krishna's, the life here is already Krishna's, so what are we surrendering?
Nothing.
Our false ego. We're surrendering something that's false. And it's giving us nothing but trouble. But we don't like to do that, right? How do we know we don't like to do that? Whenever somebody comes up to us and says, "You made a mistake." I what? So this having great attachment for the process of surrender is, oh, you're helping me surrender my false ego. Right? When somebody criticizes us, when somebody points out our mistakes, when somebody points out our attachments, when somebody offends us, when someone insults us, when somebody disrespects us, wow, I get an opportunity to surrender my false ego. So attachment for the process of surrender. And attachment for the holy places, particularly Vrindavan, the land of cows. So if we love Krishna, we're going to love this place. Most of us love our own place, isn't it? We love our own homeland, you know, our ancestral land, or our house, or our flat, or our room. Right? But if we love Krishna, we will love this place. Not only, of course, in India, but all holy places. This is also Vrindavan. If here is Radha and Krishna, then Vrindavan must also be here, right? Isn't it? And the holy place we make in our room or in our home. Sometimes when I visit people's homes, I see that they're worshiping the deity so nicely, but the place where they're worshiping the deity is dirty. You've seen this, right? They're doing their puja, but you run your finger along it and it's black, or it's full of little dead flower petals and incense ashes and things like this. And this means that when we come to a holy place, we come with the mood of serving not only the Lord there, but the Lord's place. So when we come to the temple here, for example, we don't just want to say, "I'm going to offer flowers to the deities and I'm going to sing for the deities," but to do some service for the place, to clean the temple, to do something to help the temple itself, help us build a new kitchen here and so forth, to have love for the place. We see the opposite of this mentality, especially in many holy places in India. Isn't that a fact? People come there to get blessings. How many of you have been to holy places in India? So you see people go there, "Oh, I'm going to get some blessings from the Lord. I'm going to get my desires fulfilled." And then what do to the holy place? They trash it. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
I saw this most poignantly in Ujjain. The one time I visited, so there's a holy river there, and I was asking what kind of fruit is on the trees, very strange fruit growing on the trees that are lining the riverbanks. And some of the devotees there said, "Orbila, this is not fruit." They said, "Come, we'll show you." So on the bank of the river, there were many, many places where there were brahmanas who were making offerings to the river. So people come and they want, you know, they want a child, or they want money, or they want to find a spouse, or they want to find a job, or they want to pass their exams, or they want to get free of a disease, or something like that. So they go to one of these brahmanas, and they pay some money, and the brahmana makes an offering to the river. And then what do they do after they make the offering to the river? They take the paraphernalia and they... what do they do with it? They throw it in the river. So the offering paraphernalia was made out of woven fibers, like some kind of wicker, and then little unbaked clay cups in which they had the different flowers or whatever. So that would easily biodegrade, of course. But they had done something to the tray and to each of the cups. They had covered the tray and each of the cups with
plastic.
So each time they made an offering, there were about 6 or 7 plastic bags going into the river. During the rainy season, the river would rise, and the plastic bags would get stuck on the branches of the trees. In the dry season, when the river went down, the trees were covered with all these colored plastic bags. So that is not love for a holy place. Ranadasa Swami asks us also to have great attachment for the devotees. And he lists 3 kinds of devotees. So he says we should have great attachment for the residents of Vrindavan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that these residents of Vrindavan means not those who live in a particular geographical location with their body, but those who are always meditating on Vrindavan. Which means that you could be here in Melbourne and be a resident of Vrindavan. And some of you may be familiar that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that some of the people who are geographically living in Radhakund are actually living in? Anybody know what he said? Narakakund, they're living in hell. So it's not just where you put your body. You know, in the early days of ISKCON, we used to define advancement geographically. So if you slept in the temple, you were a very advanced devotee. If you slept across the street, you were a middle devotee. And if you slept, you know, a few kilometers away, then you were a beginner. So just like Srila Prabhupada was asked, you make advancement faster living in the temple. He said that depends whether your mind is on another subject matter. So we should have great love for those who are always in meditation on Vrindavan. Then, interestingly enough, also we should have great love for the devotees on this planet, which Bhaktivinoda defines as the serious practitioners of any tradition, even if they're not meditating on the Lord in Vrindavan. Not just respect, but great attachment. This is the principle that everyone who loves God should love everyone who loves God. Can you imagine what kind of world that would be? What do you think? That'd be a nice world. Then also, we're supposed to love the brahmanas who teach varnashram. So this is, of course, most spiritual leaders in the world are in this category. They are teaching people how to be moral in the world. They are teaching people God in relation to the world. Okay, we want to move, if there, our cameraman can come, because I want to move to the flip chart, if that's okay. Do we have some pens here on the flip chart? And could we have the lights on for a moment? Is it okay that we'll be doing this a few times?
Yep.
Is that all right with you? You all knew this was a workshop, right? Punch up. Now, what's very interesting about these three kinds of devotees... Oh, do I need the mic, right? What's very interesting about these three kinds of devotees that Bhagavad Gita Swami says we should have attachment for is that Bhaktivinoda, in his commentary, categorizes them as the advanced or the uttama, the intermediate or the majjhima, and the beginner or the kanista. Okay. So what I'd like to do is just a little comparison of how these advanced, intermediate, and beginners are described in different shastras and by our acharyas. So in Mana Shiksha, does somebody remember how these are defined? How was the advanced devotee defined? Here, Manashiksha, what we just went over. I know it's the evening of a work day, but... Who were the advanced devotees here? Well, that was the misconception of ISKCON in 1972. That was the wrong idea. But at least who listened like that was good. Okay, so we have these three levels of devotees for whom we should have attachment. These are the highest, the intermediate, and the beginner. Okay, so who are the highest devotees for whom we should have attachment? Okay, those who live in Vrindavan. In meditation, right? So these are the most advanced devotees for whom we should have attachment. Then, who are the intermediate devotees for whom we should have attachment? Anyone who loves God. even if they're not meditating on Krishna in Vrindavan. Okay? So basically, serious practitioners of all traditions, actually all bona fide traditions, not if they're, you know, ghost worshippers, and who are the beginning devotees for whom we should have attachment?
Brahmanas
who teach Varnashram. So who can tell me where else in the scriptures are by the acharyas we have a description of higher, intermediate, and beginning devotees? Anyone tell me any other place? Nectar instruction, very good. Any other place? Nectar of devotion. And then there's another one which is quoted all over the place. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. That's the one you hear the most often. Can anyone tell me what should go here? What should we put in these scripts? Tell me anything from any of them. Okay, Bhagavatam, tell me any of these categories?
Krishna, Uttama is one who sees Krishna everywhere, he sees everywhere Krishna.
Sees Krishna everywhere? And he sees everyone as what?
Krishna servant.
Okay.
Krishna devotees.
And everyone as devotee. Okay. Can you tell me anybody else, any others? Yes, that's on the nectar of instruction. So worships the deity and has taken what? Yes. Has diksha. Excellent. Okay. Any others?
Discriminates among people who preach.
Okay. Can you tell me which people? That's this one here?
No,
that's here. But to which people?
Preachers.
Which what's discriminates among people? What are the four people that discriminate between?
Is it different personality in
God? Yes, they love God.
They love
God. They worship. They love worship God. And what do they do with the devotees?
Friends.
With the devotees. They encourage the innocent. And the last?
Avoid the
envious. They avoid the envious. Okay. Some more? So there's someone who chants the holy name.
Kanishtha is knowledge. much chance and doesn't have much faith.
Okay, so weak, faith, and knowledge of Shastra and can be misled by others. Okay, and what's the middle? Strong knowledge and faith. But
may get defeated in argument,
but may be defeated. And the topmost? Strong faith and
preaches
and can teach others. Okay, so strong faith and knowledge in Shastra and can teach others. Okay, we've got one more here.
They think they're the best devotee.
Okay, so think they're the best devotee? And where do they think God is found? Only where? Only in the temple. So God, only in the temple. And they don't know how to what? Okay. They don't know how to respect, they don't know how to relate to others. Okay. This kind of thing, this is like, God is there on Sunday from 11 to 1, and on Monday from 4 to 6, there's no God. So that's what most people's religion is like. And this is also, God is only in my temple. You know, God's only in a Shiite Muslim mosque and not in a Sunni Muslim mosque, or only a Catholic church and not a Protestant church, right? That kind of thinking. All right. So we look at this and we see these are about different areas. So these are beginning, intermediate, advanced through like different areas of bhakti. So what's this one about? This is, all right, we'll do this one first. This is easiest. What's this one about?
Knowledge
and faith in Shastra. So this is about faith and knowledge of Shastra. What's this one about? Relationships. Excellent. Okay. And what's this one about? Chanting the holy name, taking initiation, worshiping the deity, or 24 hours bhakti? Your practice. Right, how committed you are to the process. And this is about your understanding of the Absolute. What we're hearing here in Mana Shiksha is beginning, intermediate, advanced according to how you understand the Absolute. Here you're understanding the Absolute as, well, God just wants us to be moral in the world, and here there's a general idea of God, and here there's a very specific idea of God as Krishna in Vrindavan. So here's your object of worship. And we see that this is not all necessarily the same. Oh, thank you. This is not all necessarily the same person. In other words, you could have somebody who's just starting to chant the holy name. They haven't made more of a commitment to the process, but their object of worship is Krishna in Vrindavan. And they may even have strong faith and knowledge in the scripture. They just haven't made that much of a commitment yet. And you can have somebody who's got weak faith, but they've already taken initiation. Right? You could have people here, they have strong faith and knowledge of the scripture, they teach others, but they think they're the best devotee. Yes. So you could have all varieties of this. You follow? These are not, this is looking from a little different angle.
And here Anathaspa Swami is asking us to respect all levels of devotees. Okay, can we move the camera again and lights off? Oh, maybe we can have some lights on.
You can only have lights on the wall.
Are they really? Are they easy to see with all the lights on? Oh, okay. No, see, you lose the color. See, this is the black and white one. But as soon as I go to a color one...
Look, I didn't see any difference.
I don't know. Can you see the color? Let's try with the lights off and see. Try lights off. Yeah. See, it's only true for the black and white. Sorry. What to do? Oh, the video very dark. The real nature of my heart is being revealed. But I would cry if all those beautiful color paintings I put in there weren't seen, so I'm not quite sure what to do. They'll have to buy the book. We have such a limited quantity of the book. That's the problem. Prabhupada looks more important with the lights on. But we'll have to. So the lights can either be all on or all off. Okay, we'll have to think about this for tomorrow. Okay, then attachment to the Gayatri mantra. Attachment to the mantra, not chanting ritualistically. Here in this first verse, Raghunathas Goswami is really getting us off the ritualistic platform. So you don't want to just chant as like mom, mom, mom. You really want to get into the mantra. And attachment for the holy name. Again, this means not chanting ritualistically, not chanting mechanically, but chanting with great attachment. After all, it's said in the Bhagavatam 2.8.4 and 2.8.5 that the holy name sits in the lotus of our heart on a seat of attachment. If we don't have attachment for the holy name, it won't really rest there. And this is our painting for this verse. This is Nandagram. And we've done this not only according to the verse, but also according to the descriptions of Nandagram from Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Kavi Kanapur. Okay, so we can turn the lights back on for a minute. Something else I'll just put on the board. So we can just review. So where should we have attachment for? Anybody remember?
Holy name.
Okay, holy name.
And Gayatri.
Okay. And? Guru. And?
Mantra.
Mantra is Gayatri. Devotees, okay, we had three levels of devotees, right? What were the three levels?
Living in Vrindavan.
Live in Vrindavan, in meditation. What else?
Devotees.
We respect Krishna's of all things.
Not respect. Not respect. Great what?
Attachment.
Not just respect. Respect is lower. And also?
Brahmana who teaches Varnash.
Okay, where else do we have attachment for?
Holy Dham.
Holy Dham, holy places. And one more?
Prashada.
Well, that's included in the one more.
For the lotus feet of the Lord.
Well, it was the process of
surrender
to the lotus feet of the divine couple, which includes taking for supper. And reading the Shastra. Okay. process surrender. So what I'd like us all to do just for 2-3 minutes is, and this is about, again, attachment. So I'd like you to either just on your own, or if you like with the person next to you, or three people, not more than three, is to figure out what you're going to do in the next week to increase your attachment for one of these. What would you like to do in the next week that you know you can do and you will do that would increase your attachment for one of these? So you can either think of it by yourself, write it down with yourself, or you can talk with a neighbor. Now, for example, one of the things that I've come up with for myself is to increase my attachment to Guru, that when I say the prayers to Srila Prabhupada, that I will say them clearly and think about what they mean. So I don't just go to Mama Shabbat, it's like, I don't know if there's something you say, so she'll come. But as you think about what am I saying? And really meditate on the meaning and try to get a feeling of attachment for Srila Prabhupada, who's very dear to Krishna on earth, who's defeating impersonalism and voidism, who's the follower of Bhaktisiddhanta, who's preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya. So that's something I do anyway. I'm saying the pranam prayers to Srila Prabhupada many times a day, but I wanted to increase my quality. So that's just an example. So if you can think of something simple that you can do within the next week that would increase your attachment to anyone. So just 2 minutes. So you can talk with the neighbor, or you can just think about it yourself. All you have to have is love, right? You have people in every religion. You know, the Hindus will say, oh, I love Krishna so much, right? The Christians will say, oh, I am loving Jesus so much. So people may think, all you have to have, that's it, all you have to have is love and attachment. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the word excessive attachment means that one has to also make an effort. He says one should not just rely on luck. One should not become complacent, thinking, well, if Krishna favors me, then I will get bhakti, and if he doesn't favor me, then I won't. So love and effort. Oh, one may think that's all we need. Devotion and service, right? Devotion and service. Okay, that's it. But there's something very important that Raghunath Das Goswami says in this verse 1, and this is the theme of about two-thirds of Manashiksha, and that is sada dambam hitva. He says, always give up pride. You say, oh, this is a padati, it's a step-by-step guide, and here we are in verse 1, being told to always give up pride. Always or completely give up pride. So if I have to always or completely give up pride in step 1, I'm finished. I can't go on in this book. So please be peaceful. You will not have to give up your pride until Friday. Where we get to verse 8. So why is it, if we don't completely give up pride until verse 8, that Raghunath Das Goswami is telling us here in verse 1 to completely give up pride? So this can be understood as, even at the beginning, we should give up our pride as far as possible. Also, it can be understood as a little warning. Just like sometimes you go on a road where you have to pay a toll, correct? And you may tell somebody, be prepared on this road that you're going to pay a toll. So in a similar way, Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, be prepared as you take this path step by step to perfection, that you're going to be giving up pride. And what we're going to be doing is giving up deeper and deeper layers and types of pride, more and more subtle types of this false vision of ourselves. So why is it so important to give up pride? You know, as soon as there's pride, we cannot have any kind of love. Because when there's pride, there's a feeling of entitlement. Right? You come home and your spouse has made a 20-course meal and cleaned the whole house, and you think, well, of course, they're married to me, that's what they have to do. And we don't have any appreciation. Right? It's our feeling of entitlement that causes us to be offended and get angry at people. How dare you treat me like that? You can treat him like that, not me. Don't you know who you're dealing with? And it damages our relationships. It also removes all of our joy because we don't have any gratitude when we have a sense of entitlement. So I always give this example. You know, if you take $50, you go to the store, you buy something, you find out it was only worth $5, how do you feel? Right? If $50, you go to the store, you buy something, it was worth $50, how do you feel? $50, you go to the store, you buy something, you find that it was worth $1,000, how do you feel? So our feeling of happiness is an indirect, inverse relation to our feeling of deservedness. We can't even have any joy in our life, and when we're prideful, of course, we can't receive any instruction. We can't listen to anybody, because we think we already know. Okay, so this first verse is attachment, listed all the areas of attachment, making an effort, and always giving up pride. So now we're going to start giving up this pride in various forms on the basis of this attachment. We're going to give up pride and go further because we have love for the process of surrender, because we have love for the holy place, because we have love for the guru, because we have love for the devotees, because we have love for the holy name, because we have love for the sacred mantras. That's going to be our reason that we're going to be relinquishing our pride. Just like in a material relationship, because you have affection and love for somebody, you're willing to adjust your behavior to please them. Isn't that a fact? Don't we all do that? Yes? So that's going to be our motive in bhakti. It's a very different motive in other forms of yoga. In other forms of yoga, people's motive is their own enlightenment, their own freedom, their own spiritual experience. But here, our motive is spiritual attention. So are you ready for step 2?
Yep.
This is a verse which Srila Prabhupada particularly liked to quote. Everyone together?
Na dharma, na dharma, shruti anayi uttam kila guru. Rajegara.
perform free service to Sri Radha Krishna. O mind, unceasingly remember the son of Sachi as a son of Nanda Maharaj and Sri Guru as the dearest servant of Lord Guru.
Well, don't do dharma? What else is left? That's all there is. How do we understand this instruction? One way we can understand it is by looking at Bhagavad Gita 6.3, that dharma is for the beginner and freedom from dharma is for the graduate. Another way to look at this is from Bhagavad Gita 4.7 in terms of our identity. Here, Krishna talks about three kinds of action, not two. Karma, vikarma, akarma. Karma is like dharma, vikarma is like adharma, and akarma is something else. Here Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, okay, we're giving up pride. Here's the first way we're giving up pride. Most of us motivate ourselves in this world by dharma. I am a very good person. I earn the money because I am a good husband. I cook the meals because I am a good mother. I take care of my parents because I am a good son. I chant Hare Krishna because I am a good disciple. I am a very good person. Who's that about?
Myself.
It's about myself, right? That's not love. If a man comes home from work and his wife says, here, I cook dinner tonight because I am a good wife. Now, my dear friends, if the only thing you remember from these 3 days is this point, this is a real life-changing point. The source of our angst and anxiety in our relationships is that we're basing them on an identity of I'm a good such and such. Just recently, one friend wrote to me, oh, my children did this and that, it must mean I'm not a good mother. If what's motivating me to act is I am a good son, then I am dependent on my parents agreeing that I'm a good son in order for me to feel happy. Will our parents always agree that we are a good son or daughter?
No.
No. Will we always agree that we're a good son or daughter?
No.
No. And when our parents or our friends or other family members, you know, you're really not such a good son, you're really not such a good daughter, we become hurt. What do you mean? I'm sacrificing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Then there's the adharmic identity. That is, I'm a bad person. I'm a rebel, I'm a non-conformist. I don't have to follow the rules, I don't have to pay my taxes, I can do whatever I like. So sometimes people are motivated by that kind of identity, which is also a kind of pride. So what are we going to do instead? Because both dharma and adharma entangle us in the law of karma. They are both full of pride, and they both cause us difficulty in this world. So instead, we want to come to this platform of akarma. I call this the secret agent principle. So why secret agent? Because you will look generally like a dharmic person, but the motive will be different. So we all know how to do this. It's actually a very simple thing. So let's say I'm talking to you, but maybe I'm not really caring so much about you. Maybe I want to impress you. Have we all done that? Have we all dealt with one person? We're really trying to impress another person. Sometimes we do this with the Lord. We're worshiping Krishna. See how I'm worshiping Krishna? See how I am chanting? Are you watching? Right? So we want to reverse that. Instead of dealing with Krishna to impress other humans, we want to deal with humans to impress Krishna. So simply, I'm going to deal with my husband, my wife, my mother, my father, my son, my daughter, my boss, my employee, my other, you know, my brahmachari friend, whatever, just to make Krishna smile. Not so I can be a good brahmachari, and not so I can be with this or that, but just to make Krishna smile. When we act on that platform, then we are not dependent on other people or even our own assessment of our behavior in order to feel good about ourselves and in order to be happy with others. So this is the first giving up of pride, to do everything simply to make Krishna smile, not on the platform of a false dharmic or adharmic identity. Because you can see, you can have an attachment to all these, but still have a false identity, couldn't you? Isn't that fun? Could you be attached to Guru and the holy name and the devotees and all the places, but still think, I am a very good person, or I am a rebel? So this is, we're coming, as we said, this is a panity. It keeps coming deeper. So, okay, you have this attachment, you're making an effort, you're working at giving up pride, change your identity. Jivaraswara Pai Krishna Rishidas. I am simply acting to please the Lord, not to be a good or rebel in this world. Then remember we talked about having love for the process of surrender to the lotus feet of the divine couple. So that implies a one-pointedness to the divine couple. And you might have mentioned that, you might have noticed that Lord Chaitanya was not mentioned in verse 1. And if you know anything about Raghunatha Goswami, you might have thought that was peculiar, because Raghunatha Goswami was very attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Here he says we should see the son of Mother Sanchi as being the same as the son of Nanda Maharaja. Now, I'm not sure why he mentions Lord Chaitanya's mother and Krishna's father. But the point is that whenever we see Lord Chaitanya, we say, oh, here is Krishna. In fact, this is how we should see all of the incarnations of the Lord. You may know that in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes that we should be attached to any form of the Lord. He says that one should fix one's mind on any form of the Lord. But in 1865 of the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says, do not divert your attention to any form other than Krishna. Well, how do you fix your mind on Lord Ramachandra if you can't divert your attention to him? And the point is to see all the forms of the Lord as Krishna. There's my Krishna, maybe. Right now he's a little animal. But we see all the different incarnations like that. So because this verse talks about Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, in our painting we wanted to show Krishna and Nanda Maharaj. Maybe at least we can turn off the light for a minute for this. You can see this. There's Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. Now also in this verse, right, that Goswami talks about Radha Krishna. So we want to have Radharani in the painting. So think about what pastime shows Radha, Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj. And we chose this particular lila from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. And we've done in the book here. So all of our paintings, as I said, are taken not only from the verses, but also from various scriptures. So in the back of the book, we have the verses and the stories behind each of the paintings. Okay, turn the buzzer. So then he says we should see the guru as the best friend of the Lord, who couldn't be praised up. So what verse do we chant in the mornings like this, that we see the guru as the best friend of the Lord? So this point is very important in verse 2. Our one-pointedness is to Krishna. Guru, we don't worship Guru separately from Krishna. We don't worship the different incarnations of Krishna separately from Krishna. We're one-pointed to Krishna, and our worship of Lord Chaitanya and the other incarnations is part of our one-pointedness to Krishna. Our worship of Guru is as the friend of the Lord. We don't see the Guru as separate. Like Prabhupada would say, Guru is not your friend, only Krishna is your friend, but because the Guru is giving you Krishna, therefore the Guru is your friend. Okay, you ready for the next step? Everybody ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, what's the reason for Lord Chaitanya not being mentioned in the first verse? And is it possibly because Lord Chaitanya was his guru? And so, therefore, it was superfluous to mention him.
I think that's a very brilliant insight, that it was superfluous to mention Lord Chaitanya in the first verse because he was Raghunatha Goswami's guru. And also because he's included in this one-pointed for the divine couple. So both. When you say one-pointed for the divine couple, to approach the divine couple without approaching Lord Chaitanya is going to be very difficult. We'll say it's maybe theoretically possible for somebody by simplicity, but generally to approach the divine couple without Mahaprabhu is going to be impossible. So include it. And also Mahaprabhu as guru. But again, this is a paditi. So each step is going deeper and further. Okay, how are you going to have one pointedness to the divine couple? By seeing Lord Chaitanya as Krishna and by seeing Guru as the friend. And that way you have one pointedness and yet you have this relationship with Mahaprabhu and Guru. Excellent, thank you for bringing that up. I should mention that even with three nights at 1.5 hours each, we're not going to be able to go super deep. So the most I taught this is in 30 hours in Slovenia, and the least I teach it is in 1.5 hours. Well, sometimes for Sunday feast I have a shorter half an hour version where we don't chant the verses and so forth. But we really are just touching some of the main points. Okay, we ready to chant verse 3?
Yep.
Nadi kerava sangra jabuni sara jam prati jano yuva twan mantra che kari chari chamara dami ase swarupam shri rupam sarvanam vihatasya Krishna, and whenever Krishna will bring me back, I am willing to wait for that, even many years. Then he says that we should follow Sarva Damodar Rupa and Sanatana Vivadi Raghunatha Goswami to this picture. Their books are full of the jewels of how to attain spontaneous love to Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, what do we mean by spontaneous love? Regulated bhakti, one is still in a covering of illusion to a great extent, and one is following the scriptures primarily out of an intellectual conviction. I am following this process of bhakti because I believe that it's the truth. Now, a person in regulated bhakti has some spiritual experiences, they have some taste, they have some attachment, but the primary motivation is a philosophical, intellectual, and logical conviction. In spontaneous bhakti, the primary motivation is one's attachment to Krishna. Now, we can think of this just like I met a gentleman once in South India who wanted to get married but hadn't yet found somebody. And he said, well, she's got to speak Tamil, she's got to make good idlis. You know, and I came back a couple years later and he'd marry a Bengali. I said, what is this? He said, oh, but I love her so much. So this is what it's like. In the beginning, one may worship Krishna. I'm worshiping Krishna because it says here in the scriptures that Krishna is God and the philosophy makes so much sense to me. And after a while, just, I love Krishna. I don't care. You can bring some statement that Shiva is God or whatever, but I just love Krishna. So why particularly Swarup Damodar? If we want to attain to this platform of spontaneous devotion, why Swarup Damodar? Because Lord Chaitanya gave the service of teaching the process of attaining spontaneous devotion to Swarup Damodar. Now, as I mentioned in the beginning of the seminar, this Mata Shiksha is very important for establishing that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada actually taught this process and not only regulated devotion. Swarup Damodar taught two methods of attaining spontaneous devotion, practicing spontaneous devotion. One was to Bhikeshwara Pandit and one was to Raghunathas Goswami. The process taught to Bhikeshwara Pandit was called by Bhaktivinoda an external path. The one taught to Raghunathas Goswami, which is explained in Srimad Shiksha, is an internal path. Very briefly, the difference is that the external path involves many, many hours a day of chanting many mantras to all of the associates of Mahaprabhu and Krishna with a corresponding meditations and worship. It would be very hard to follow the external path if you were living and working in the world where you were a preacher. The external path, as written down by the disciple and grand disciple of the Keshwar Pandit, does not discuss qualifications for the practitioner. Remember we talked about how these first three verses of Mata Shiksha really talk about the qualifications? You have to have attachment, you have to make an endeavor, you have to give up pride, you have to have the right identity, the right relationship with Lord Chaitanya, the right relationship with Guru, be patient life after life, follow Swarup Damodar Rupa and Sanatana. No qualifications are listed in the external path. Presumably, the external path would have to be taught by a very honest and qualified guru who would assess your qualifications. But it's not listed there. And there's no list in the external path manuals of the changes in consciousness that happen. We've already seen some changes here in these first three verses of Mata Shiksha, haven't we? Going through attachment, going through effort, going through identity, going through patience. And you'll see tomorrow, those of you who are courageous enough to come tomorrow when we go through the obstacles, how we go even deeper into these changes of consciousness. That's not mentioned in the manuals of the external path. Now, the external path is a bona fide path. But because it lists only behaviors, it can be imitated and it can be perverted, which is exactly what started to happen, especially in the time of Bhaktisiddhanta. This internal path, on the other hand, cannot be imitated. I mean, you can lie. You can say, yes, I am patient for birth after birth. But you can't imitate that. It's a state of consciousness. Also, this internal path talks about qualifications. The internal path does not give specific behaviors that are different from that of regulated bhakti. So it's basically invisible. Somebody following the internal path of spontaneous devotion looks externally just like someone following the path of regulated devotion. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in his logo, shows that he did indeed put emphasis both on regulated and spontaneous devotion. This logo was designed by Bhaktisiddhanta himself, and Srila Prabhupada put this on the gates of our temple in ISKCON, Mayapur. We had to redraw this because there weren't any good resolution copies from the harmonist. Instead of the bottom of the script, we have Roman letters with Sanskrit. But here you can see in the inside, it's the holy name. On the top is Lord Chaitanya. The bottom, Guru Gaudiya, meaning the Sangha. And on this side, this whole side of the logo is about regulated bhakti, and this whole side of the logo about spontaneous bhakti. In our chapter here in Manushiksha, we show how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's instructions on attaining spontaneous bhakti are exactly the same as that which is in Manushiksha. However, if a person thinks that the only path of spontaneous devotion is the external path, they're not going to see that in Bhaktisiddhanta's book or in Srila Prabhupada's book. And therefore, they will erroneously decide that it's not here. They'll say, you know, I don't see a bunch of people living like Babaji's and meditating on the apricot lila, you know, at Radhakundi for 4 hours a day. So I guess there's no spontaneous devotion here, and I guess I have to leave to find it someplace else. So it's here, but it's here according to the path of Manushir. Those on this internal path externally are doing all the same behaviors as those in regulated bhakti, while inside their relationship with Krishna is blooming like a bud turning into a flower. And this is a relationship with Krishna as I want to be Krishna's servant, like here we have Rakta and Petra, Krishna's chief servants, or I want to be Krishna's friend, we're Krishna's chief friends. Sudama. 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 Sridham. Madhumangal, everybody's favorite. Ujjala. Or I want to love Krishna as my son, like here we have Rohini and Balaram, Madhya Soda, Nandimash, or a romantic relationship with Krishna, and if we can turn off the light for this painting. This is our painting for with light. This is our painting for this verse. So this is the beginning awakening of an attachment for Krishna. Because it's just the beginning, Krishna and Balaram are seen from behind. The cows are kicking up a lot of dust. Because this is the time one just has some intuitive idea. Maybe I want to be Krishna's friend. Maybe I want to see Krishna as my son. And here we have the devotees, the chief devotees in all of the rasas. So you might say, well, Arila, if this is discussed in verse 3, sa ragam, but I don't know what my relationship is with Krishna. Can I go on in Manushiksha? And the answer is, if you want to have a relationship with Krishna awakened, then certainly you can go on. So how many of you would like to discover your eternal relationship with Krishna? Okay, so you can go on in Manushiksha. So turn the lights back on. So tomorrow, we're going to be going through the obstacles on the path. It's going to be going from subtle, from gross, to more subtle, to more subtle, to more subtle. Tomorrow's class, Raghunath Das Goswami stops being the nice guy with his mind. Do you remember in verse 1 how he talked to his mind? Anybody remember back from verse 1?
Okay.
He said, oh my what?
Brain?
Oops, sorry. Oh my brother, yes, let's go back and take a look at Krishna. Come on, technology behave. Oh, my computer's not behaving. He's sad. Right? Oh dear brother, holding your feet. I beseech you with sweet words. He's not hitting his mind with a stick in verse 1. Tomorrow, he's going to get out the stick. And I'm just going to warn you that tomorrow's verses are heart surgery. It's sweet. It's wonderful. Everything that is false and nasty in our lives will be removed and we'll just be left with happiness. But it is a little heavy. So if you didn't sign up for that, please skip tomorrow's class. You can always pretend that you have a very important appointment with the Queen of England. But it is very, very exciting what we'll be doing tomorrow. Very exciting, very real. If you would like to come to authenticity in your life, and you would really like to go forward in spiritual life, so this verse is when you do it. And then the next day are the steps in perfection. So again, we go to a lot of sweetness. So thank you very much. And there will be artwork now from Didi's. If anybody wants to get a book, we have, as I say, we just have these copies here. That's all we have. And you're welcome to pick them up. They're $15 because we were able to bring them here from India. And if you'd like, I can sign one of the books. Raghunath Das Goswami Ki. Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki.